Accession number 14978, Charles Turnbull, Reel 6.
Mr. Turnbull, Reel 6. What were your duties in France in these early days, Mr. Turnbull?
Similar to initially to what they were in England, really, was compiling the detail for the deer and carrying out the orders of the company commander and the second in command, and anything that the lieutenants, as far as their platoons were concerned, anything that could be helpful as far as anything written, they did come to me and ask me to do that sort of thing.
What time did your day start?
Well, reveille was quite early, and then as far as I was concerned, after probably a PT parade on the morning, commencing my duties about 9 o'clock, when the company commander would appear on the scene and tell me what I had to do for the day.
More or less like normal office hours?
More or less at that time. Of course, that did not last a great long time. Of course, when the German breakthrough came, well, everything like that more or less ceased.
Were you subjected to any rumours? As you say, this was the quiet time. Were there any rumours flying about at this time which were reaching you?
At that time, no rumours at all. Until we hadn't been there a great long time before we had reports about parachutists being dropped. And then one began to wonder whether something was about to happen. And then shortly after that, as I've mentioned previously, we were given the order to the whole of the brigade to move, and the 10th Battalion was sent to protect the Abbeville airdrome. I suppose the reason being, after these reports about parachutists being dropped, the feelings must have been that something was about to break. And then shortly after that, we had news about the German breakthrough.
Were you able to ascertain from the French civilians at this time their attitude to how the war was going? Did they feel that the Maginot Line and their army would kick the Germans away at this moment in time?
Well, that was the general feeling about the French population, that the Maginot Line was the thing, that they'd been sort of brainwashed that the Maginot Line would stop anything that came at them, and this sense of security had been built up.
Did they talk to you in that way?
Yes.
When you met them?
Yes. But what I would say disappointed me about the French soldier, I can always remember, they seemed to be, what I could see, really supposed to be frontline troops. And then one would see sort of disorganized units whereby they could be marching back home in the evening and going forward again either the next day or 2 or 3 days after. There didn't seem to be the cohesion in the French army that there was in the British army. To me, there seemed to be, could I say, a lackadaisical attitude about things.
Did this disturb you, knowing that what kind of soldier the German was? Did it disturb you to see this kind of casual a way of...
Well, that was my initial reaction at the time. We'd been brought up to think that the French army had been trained and trained and trained, that there were, of course, I admit that we were half-trained or little-trained, and we expected better from them, but I considered at the time that our turnout and discipline and that sort of thing was better than theirs. Whether I was biased in that opinion or not, I don't know. But as a young man, I must admit that I expected something better.
The men were working, obviously, under quite dusty conditions, digging and whatever they were doing. How was the turnout of the battalion kept up at all?
I would say that the turnout of the battalion was good. But after the training that we had in South Shields, that was always instilled into the men. The turnout was of great importance, and the regimental sergeant major and his NCOs ensured that the sections and the platoons were always well turned out, and that was the reaction of the officers as well. The turnout was of primary importance.
Well, there's still lots of kit inspections that you had to go through?
I would say that kit inspections ceased.
Discipline in France, in effect, was somewhat different from what it had been in England.
Yes, different to what it was in England, but if one was still on guard duty and even company parades and drill formations that were took place and that sort of thing, it was still expected that that sort of discipline would be held. And if an inspection was held by the company commander, the turnout and the drill had to be in good fettle.
Being in the company office, you would be seen, become involved to a degree with people who were breaking the rule, you might say. Were there many people coming forward as for disciplinary purposes?
There wasn't a lot of, should I say, where discipline hadn't been complied with. The odd one where an order hadn't been obeyed and he would be sort of confined to cookhouse duties, or but nothing really I can remember of any drastic importance. Didn't find that people were sort of absconding without leave or going down into the village without permission or not having a pass or anything like that.
So ill-equipped and still not fully trained, the morale was still good?
Yes, I would say the morale was good, because I'd previously said that really, in my opinion, the type of recruit that was coming into the army, they hadn't had that training at home, that you're training from boyhood, made you feel that whatever orders were received from your so-called superiors, like your time at home, what had transpired in your young days was carried on in, well, at that time we were more than teenagers, but we were still quite young, and that training had never been forgotten. And people from the North Country, it was expected that an order would be adhered to. I think that really the few people that I came in contact with from the South probably was a little different from the North Country people. I think the North Country people were more willing to knuckle down to the army routine than the Southerner.
We haven't looked at the mail situation. Were letters coming to you?
Yes, we received our mail all right when it was brought around by the post corporal, and no problems as far as that was concerned until something did happen.
Mail obviously would be very important to the soldier.
Very important. One liked to keep in touch with the happenings at home. And it was a thing that was very much looked forward to. Of course, the letters that we were sent back were censored. One had to write your letter, and then there again, they came into the company office. And the duty officer for the day censored the letters before they were passed.
Did you read every one? To censor them, obviously.
The officer did. The officer in charge.
It must have been quite time consuming to be sitting with a pile of other people's letters wading through them.
Well, let's face it, when he was reading through them, he would glance through them. Not literally read a letter as we read a letter. It was sort of become obvious that if there was anything in that letter, he would sort of spot it after glancing down a page.
What kind of thing do you think he would be looking for censorship?
I would say that if a person had said anything of an adverse nature, or probably, could we say, giving something of a nature which should not be disclosed to people in England?
Did you accept censorship as being routine? Something that had to happen?
I would say yes, it had to happen, really. One had sufficient common sense to realise that this sort of thing had to take place, and could not object to that happening.
Obviously, within the civilian population, there'd be young ladies. Were any of the men becoming involved with French young ladies?
Well, naturally, female company was greatly missed. And if anyone went down to the village and got into the estaminets, if anyone could sort of make a hit with the daughter of the, could we say, the lady in charge of the place, well, one liked to think that one had made a little hit.
There weren't many young French men around, but they themselves would be away in the army.
Yes,
in a sense, competition wouldn't be great.
But
didn't cause any problems.
Cause any problems, no problems.
So you arrived there in the April, when the German invasion started in May. What do you recall of getting that notice, that happening?
The initial reaction was that really we weren't prepared for it, and it was a shock to think that the German breakthrough had come that quickly. And as already had been said, the French placed so much importance in the Maginot Line. To think that their advance had been so quick, one had great difficulty in taking it all in and wondered what had really happened.
Did you move quickly after May the 10th when the attack started?
Yes, as I've already said, that the 10th Battalion had to go to this aerodrome at Abbeville, and the 11th and the 12th Battalion went off in another direction and were given a task which they had to form, which I think was a defensive task. And really, as far as I can remember, more or less as a support brigade to the 6th, 8th and 9th battalion, who had been there from the outbreak of war and were right in the advance, more or less I would say frontline troops, and would be meeting the initial onslaught of the German forces.
Were you getting any information on the progress of the German attack?
All that we knew was that really the advance had been very, very quick, and the Maginot Line had been outflanked, and we had to push up into Belgium. And really, it was hard to accept that so much progress could be made so quickly. And of course, at that time, the roads were so congested with the French population making their way back with whatever they could carry, bundles, pushchairs, anything they can, which meant that the roads were crammed.
Did you see any of this yourself?
Well, actually, oh, we're right in the middle of it. And
what effect did that have on you, seeing this?
Depressing. They seem to be in such bad circumstances. Whether this sort of thing had happened in the First World War, and they're abhorred the idea that this should happen again. And of course, the roads were strafed and bombed by German aircraft, which wasn't a very happy situation.
Did you see that happen yourself?
It was happening all the time. That really all that had happened was that when it happened, the French population and ourselves, of course, which were trying to advance, all one could do was to leave the road and take cover or get into a ditch or anything like that, that really the German aircraft at that time had no opposition.
Did the French civilians that were coming through, did they show any anger towards the British because they weren't stopping the Germans, or they weren't apparently fighting?
No anger, because really they themselves, they didn't not know the details of the actual situation, but they at the time, I would say, would be very disappointed that this had happened so quickly and the advance had not been stemmed. But who could they blame? I mean, we had the great French army there, assisted by the British, so how could it be the fault of the British when their own forces were involved? And after all they'd been told about the Maginot Line, it must have been a very hard situation for them to accept.
What were your feelings to be there on those roads with packed with civilians who were being machine gunned, etc.? What were your feelings and of the men around you?
Well, the feelings were that really this had been our first initiation into combat of this kind, and what could be done about it? That really the German aircraft had a complete free hand. That really we, as we've said, as a support brigade, even we could not respond with anything else but rifle fire to try and combat the aircraft, which was not adequate. Not like it was later on when you had modern guns to fire at the aircraft. And really at that time little was seen of the British Air Force.
Did that cause any ill feeling?
Well, I must say that we wondered where the British Air Force was. That really the German aircraft at that time, they had a complete free hand, and really they were equipped with a sort of a siren, which when they were swooping down to strafe the population on the road, it was quite frightening for them and instilled fear into the civilian population.
Were you yourselves attacked by German aircraft at this point, at this stage?
We were in the same boat as the French civilian, because we were trying to advance up these roads, which were so congested that it did cause great difficulty with, as one can imagine, with carts and the roadway being so congested, as I've already said, people carrying bundles, children, women, old men, making the way back to wherever they could get to. It wasn't a very pleasant sight. And it did one make one feel as though, well, it was a terrible situation, and why should this sort of thing happen? And little could be done to combat it.
How were you able to travel?
Well, initially we did have the use of transport supplied by the RESC. But after a while, they seemed to have great difficulty in getting transport to ferry the men, and it became a case of more long marches, which, when one casts mind one back, is why emphasis was placed on physical training and trying to become accustomed to route marching, which we found out that really the new recruits, the younger people, seem to stand the pace better than the territorial units. That really people were troubled with sore feet, and one had to become accustomed to 15 and 20 mile marches. And
how did you get up these crowded roads? They coming one way and you're trying to get up.
We're trying to get the other way. Well,
how was that organised so that you could get through?
Well, one had to manage the best way one could, and they had to attempt to clear the civilian population off the road, which was a difficult task, because they were so concerned about getting as far back as they possibly could, that it did cause lots of problems. But the problem of our people was that really they had to get to a point which had been designated to them to achieve that position. Well, they had to be shooed off the road.
Who did that job?
Well, to the officers in charge of the platoon or the company, and the NCOs.
Were the military police there at all? Did you notice that?
Can't remember seeing a lot of red caps about. It was more or less left to your own resources on how to get there.
So this marching up would be after you'd left the
Abbeville
Airfield?
After the Abbeville Aerodrome.
How long were you on the aerodrome?
Not very long. The order came to move on, advance.
You must have felt a little bit concerned that you basically had nothing, and here you were marching up possibly into a fighting situation.
Well, it became obvious that that was going to happen, and one wondered how one would combat it, really, because the one more thought about it, we didn't have the equipment. I mean, if one came in contact, we'd heard then about the advance of the mobile forces that the German had, and already the casualties that had been endured by the British forces that had been in close combat, and what weapons we had, well, how could a rifle stop the German armoured forces? can't remember seeing a lot of artillery formations about or anything like that. Totally, in my opinion, we just weren't equipped for the job and how to stem this advance.
Did this affect the morale of the men, knowing that this may well happen, where they have to face German tanks and infantry with just rifles?
Well, the young people, I would say at that time, didn't actually realise exactly what was going to happen. Because, let's face it, they'd never had to face close combat before. And when the initial battalions had to come face to face with the German, it must have been a big shock to come in contact with this armour that they had to face with little to combat it with. It was a case of really more or less, should I say, annihilation really. Different to the First World War, where they'd had to suffer in trench-to-trench warfare, this was mobile warfare of a thing that up till now we hadn't had to completely face. Things were happening so fast.
What were you carrying as you marched?
Well, we had full equipment, and of course your rifle and your ammunition, and that was it. Was I can always remember that later on, of course the company clerk's duties had been forgotten now, and we were more or less a member of still really headquarter company, but even the batman's duties had been forsaken, and the three lads again, we'd be we were in touch with each other, and Jack, Martin and myself had got together again, and we'd been allocated an anti-tank rifle.
Just the boys? The boys' rifle?
That's right. When we were given this, it was full of grease, had to be cleaned out, and we'd had no experience of firing the one. And we had to cart this thing around, and wondering what we would do if we had to come in contact with German armour. And I can always remember that really we had to occupy some positions beyond Arras. And whether it was fortunate or not, the 10th Battalion were a reserve battalion, and the 11th and 12th were in front. And our first experience was that they met the brunt, initially, of what German forces were in front of them. And they suffered severe casualties. And eventually we had to withdraw into Arras. And one of the things that was said to members of the company were, right, if German tanks come into Arras, well, try and stop them if you can. And even it was mentioned about shoving planks of wood into the trucks of German tanks, which even at that time, to me, seemed to be totally ridiculous.
What time, what date would this be?
Well, this was in the back end of April, beginning of May. Beginning of May.
The Germans attacked on the 10th of May.
10th of May.
So it was after
that.
Right,
after that time.
After that time. Yeah. So you marched up through the area of France from Abbeville up towards Arras, presumably. Were you bothered at all by any enemy actions at all at this stage? I'm thinking in terms of being attacked by aircraft. You have mentioned that aircraft were flying around.
Well, as I've already said, initially the 11th and the 12th Battalion took the brunt. And we were in reserve, and we could hear these tank formations all round. But whether it was fortunate or not, we weren't attacked directly. We had suffered casualties from aircraft, but we didn't have really a frontal attack or anything like that. So really, initially, the 10th Battalion escaped this initial onslaught.
Were you seeing the results of the attack on the 11th and 12th? Were survivors coming through?
Survivors were coming back, the few that there were, that really the had suffered quite severely. In fact, I can remember one marching column, I think it was of the 11th Battalion, had come in contact with a troop of German tanks, and it had been so unexpected that really I think very few survived.